Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast. This is the show where we chat about the movies or films that we'd forgot we'd even seen in the first place. And this is Canon episode 100. I'm your host, Adam Richmondo, and joining me as ever is my co-host, my bro host, my best pal. He is everything. He's the wind over my wings, because that's how Lyft works. He's Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello, I think I'm your fro host today, hey? Your Frodo host, you know what I'm saying?
Gandalf, isn't Elvish something for some? Isn't there something in Elvish about something?
Fuck off, god damn it.
This is so special because you guys, and when I say you guys, I mean you guys on Discord, you voted. You selected the episode that you wanted for the 100th episode. We asked you for a movie you forgot, and apparently that's The Fellowship of the Ring.
I knew there was a reason you were so excited for this to be picked. I assume it's just so you could make that joke.
Hang on a sec. I don't think I've, before, I need to go to the letterbox because I don't know the plot.
Wait. Before you go to the letterbox, can I set a little bit of historical scenery for people who might be joining us for the first time?
Yes, first time listeners.
Okay, this is just for first time listeners. Regular listeners will know this. I love Lord of the Rings, the films. I'm a huge fan. Adam sort of doesn't really care about them anywhere near the same way. And 2 years ago at Christmas, Adam agreed to come round my house, watch all three Lord of the Rings films during a sleepover, and then immediately record a podcast. Unfortunately, the legacy of that podcast doesn't exist because I selected the wrong microphone to record the whole thing, almost as though I knew what would happen. And it was never released, and regular listeners have always wanted to hear Adam's thoughts. So I assume that's why they both nominated and voted for Lord of the Rings Fellowship of the Ring. And this is the first official time that we're talking about it on the podcast, despite the fact that it's come up many a time in little snippets and bippets throughout history, hey?
It was a landslide. It was an absolute landslide. It might have even been the first mention.
It was the first comment. It was the most upvoted by a million.
Who suggested it?
It was Jay.
It was Jay, cheeky Jay.
Jay suggested it within 4 minutes of me putting a post in asking for suggestions, and it was upvoted more than nearly twice as many times as everything else.
So I need to look at the letterbox for this film because I'm not familiar with it generally. Like, what is this film? The Lord of the Rings, God. The Fellowship of the Ring. Two rings and a plural of a rings, and then a singular ring there. Lord of the Rings, : The Fellowship of the Ring. Just the first part we're doing. Just the first part. 2001, directed by Peter Jackson, based on the book of the same name. One Ring to Rule Them All. It's not called One Ring to Rule Them All. Sorry, I misspoke. It's called Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring.
No.
It stars Elijah Wood as Frodo, Ian McKellen as Gandalf, and Viggo Mortensen as Aragorn. No one else of any note really pops up in this. And it's 179 mins. Very long flick. I was going to watch this with my 10-year-old daughter, and then I thought, this is too long for a kid. No, I was like,
oh, mate.
Even if we're watching a movie in the evening and it starts at 7, she's not going to bed till like after 10.
Split it into two.
Oh, what? No way. I'm not watching a movie like that.
Come on, man. You watch The Hunger Games with your child. They're just as long, those movies.
They're not, actually. They're a swift 2 hours, actually.
Well, whatever. That's ridiculous. I can't believe you've done this. The main thing I was excited about for today was hearing what your child... I know why you've done this, why you've hidden it from your child, because you know that she would love it and you'd have to come here and bring me stories of joy from your child, yeah? An insurrection within your own family, a cuckoo in your nest that enjoys Lord of the Rings, and you won't have it, you coward.
I will at some point when she's ready, but yeah, she's totally swept up in the Hunger Games.
I'm coming round. I'm saying, child one, let's watch Lord of the Rings. And presumably she'll say, who are you?
Yeah.
Because you never come here.
One ring to rule them all. Young hobbit Frodo Baggins, after inheriting a mysterious ring from his uncle Bilbo, Ian Holm must leave his home in order to keep it from falling into the hands of its evil creator, Sauron.
I mean, that's pretty good. Oh, it goes on.
Along the way, I've said that, that's Sauron, just in case people aren't familiar. Along the way, a fellowship is formed, you could say, to protect the ring bearer and make sure that the ring arrives at its final destination, Mount Doom.
Did it say
Doom.
You could say, or did you add that?
That was me.
Oh, okay.
The Mount Doom, the only place where it can be destroyed. How many things do you think can only be destroyed at the place of where they were made?
Oh, I think it depends. Are you talking about real things or are you talking about mental health ailments?
So,
because I'm pretty sure Freud had a view on trauma, my friend, and I think you'll be surprised to hear from where it makes birth.
Right, so for me, say like Daddy, I've got a journey to mount Daddy and throw myself into his fiery pit. And
you have to mount Daddy, exactly. Yeah.
It's a lovely, neat little notion, isn't it? Based on the book by J.R.R.R. Tolkien. After I watched this last week, I had to sort of. I wanted to watch another movie about a band of...
Was it Two Towers?
Unlikely fellows who were battling a kind of an all-seeing evil. As they traverse forest and mountain and...
Hold on, stop. Let me think about what joke you're making. what's the joke here? They traverse forest and mountain. is this Predator?
Oh, mate, he's nailed it.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Yeah, you know how I know that? Because it's always Predator. Your joke is always Predator. And with forest and mountain. It's jungle. Surely it's jungle.
Yeah, I know, but come on. I mean, just I had to tilt the scales somewhere towards.
Yes. It's funny you say that, though, because the other day after I watched this, I really felt like watching another film about a band of merry men who could only fight against, the one great evil of the land with Russell Crowe as their leader. You know, we will fight them on the beaches, Russell Crowe said in his little stripy green...
Robin Hood.
Robin Hood. Yeah.
Did you actually, or was that just a bit of fun?
No, I didn't watch that, and I didn't watch this either. As discussed before the podcast, I didn't have time. But you agreed for the first time it's okay, because I watched it at Christmas, which was only about 6 weeks ago. Maybe a little more. And also, I've seen it, I would predict, maybe, I would guess, maybe 20 times. So I know it.
Is fine. Yeah.
I'm sad I didn't get to watch it. I wish I could watch it. I just didn't have time.
You've now made me watch this movie more times than I care to remember.
I've made you watch it once. The audience made you watch it this time. Nothing to do with me.
You and the audience have made me rewatch this movie more times than I care to remember. Yeah. Now, I will say, here's my position.
Yeah.
I think you can either be a Predator guy or a Fellowship of the Rings guy.
That's nonsense. Although, oddly, I do only like one of those films.
Right. I'm being a little bit facetious.
Yes.
But at the same time, watching... I rewatched Predator, but then also I've been watching RoboDoc, which is the four-part, one-hour-per-part documentary about the making of RoboCop. And I was watching that.
Right.
And so much love and craft and care went into the making of that movie. And there's something really silly about the name of it, RoboCop. The writer talks about how no one really wanted to make RoboCop. It was such a stupid name for a movie. And that really brought to mind Lord of the Rings, you know, Fellowship of the Ring, because that's a really stupid name for a movie. And it's quite a silly notion. Like, it's hobbits. It's really like, it's like wears its heart on its sleeve.
Uh-huh.
And I realised, like, there's so much love and craft that have gone into Fellowship. Like, my imprint was RoboCop. I fucking love that movie.
Yeah.
It just really connects with me. I love the violence of it, and I love the themes of it. But Fellowship, I've got respect for, but I was about to say no respect. No.
You got no love for it.
I've got no love for it. I've got respect for it because there's so many, there's clearly so much love and craft in it. I loved the model work in Fellowship. Rewatching it, I really keyed into the Peter Jackson-y, his kind of whooshing camera that he kind of pulls out. He pulls it out less and less as the films go on.
Mm. That camera sounds like this. It sounds like, you know, because it's always, whenever he whooshes in on something, it's invariably, it's a horrible orky face with a tongue sticking out going, you know?
And so I was watching that and I could see why young men connected with it at the age they did and why it
and
stays
women.
With them. Young men, though, mainly.
I would say lots of women love this as well.
Oh, right. Jesus
it has
Christ.
It has its problems, obviously, in that area. But I don't want to preclude women.
No. Young men and young women, connected with this movie,
and old people as well.
But I've got no respect for them. If you were old and you watched this, then I think
ridiculous. You
need to pull your socks up.
One of my mum's boyfriends, who I think they must have been together while Lord of the Rings was being released, he was really into it, and he bought. He bought a replica of Aragorn's sword. He used to have that in his house, which I thought was cool. I loved, you know, playing with that sword. But I think he was a particular type of person, many of whom I've met since and before. They exist, the older people, and they probably mostly are older men. I think it's maybe okay to gender in that area. Who love this film, and I kind of understand why. I would say the trappings of this. And the aesthetic of it would easily capture, you know, young people. There's a reason why young adult fiction, for example, is often set in you know, fantasy genre, fantastical settings. You know, Harry Potter's another very famous example of a similar sort of thing. But the beautiful thing about Lord of the Rings to me is its universality. In some ways, its broadness turns people off. I think people who don't have love for it, like you, for example, it's so broad that it might not, you know, it doesn't really feel specific enough as to be about anything. But that's also its advantage, I think, because there's something in Lord of the Rings for almost everyone, and it's a very, very simple story, but it doesn't preclude any audiences. It's accessible, it's available to everyone, and it's about purity. So I love it for that reason.
My wife did watch the first hour and a half with me.
Oh, yeah?
And she was really enjoying it.
Was she?
Yeah, and then the next morning, I finished, obviously.
Tell her to give me a call. We'll chat about it. I'd love that. Love that.
Yeah, I said in the next morning, I said to her, were you enjoying that? Did you? She's seen it before.
Yeah.
In fact, and again, it shows my sexism because I didn't think she would have watched it at the time. And she said, you know, I was really enjoying it. And I said, you didn't see it at the time, did you? And she said, yeah, and of course I did. I was like, what, you were in your early 20s and you're going to see a Lord of the Rings movie? What a sad, sad young woman you were.
it was a huge cultural moment. It was,
oh,
you know,
yeah. No, I
do
know.
You remember how big it was? Big a deal
Absolutely.
It was when it came. I mean, that was before we even knew who Gollum was and what he sounded like. And that really hit, I think, in the kind of the second film, that Gollum frenzy. But the cinema was packed for these films. And I went to see the third film in a sold-out cinema. And I think, you know, one of the reasons I remember this is because I was surrounded by people. Usually when I go to the cinema, I try to sit as far away from the other people as possible. But, you know, there's that scene in the third film where I forget the character's name. It's the daughter of Rohan, the kind of princess of Rohan, who's the niece of Théoden, the king. And she's the one who kills the leader of the Nazgul in the big battle when the horse is on top of Théoden.
No man can kill me.
And she takes off her helmet and says,
"Oh, don't be sexist! How dare you say that?"
Do you know what? Actually, I'm having flashbacks because we did exactly this bit in the lost recording, and it was exactly at that moment, and you used the same voice, and I bet you've forgotten that, haven't you? But that's that's who you are. That's burned into your core. Yeah. But at that moment in my story, you would go, "Oh, which thing you are, you sexist." Oh. Anyway, she stabs him in the face because she's blah 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 blah. And at that moment, the woman who would probably be in her 40s, maybe early 50s, sat in front of me. So older women also enjoy going to see this film, Adam. Thanks. She stood up like it was an American cinema.
Yeah,
it said, "You go, girl." And screamed "girl power" and went woo woo, and people clapped. Christ. People clapped in that moment. I think people didn't know what to do. But no, I'm glad that she felt that way. And I also think that's one of the powers of this film. As I said, I've watched it 20 times. I've watched these films 20 times. They never fail to move me in their simplicity. And as I get older, I find them to be more moving every year that I watch them. I find the simplicity, the purity of the message. There's the very special thing about films like this, and incidentally, it's exactly the same reason that people love Harry Potter, and it'll also be exactly the same reason that people love Star Wars. All of these big series, they're about unity combating loneliness. They're about people coming through hard times. They're about people helping each other to achieve things and standing in opposition to the face of evil or fear or to whatever their travails are, whatever gets in the way of them in their life, and through friendship and you know, unity, overcoming those things together. It's the most universal story you could possibly imagine, and it's also why J.R.R. Tolkien called Sam the real hero of Lord of the Rings. As he was writing it, he knew, okay, Frodo might be the protagonist, but Sam is the hero of the story, because Sam is the character who doesn't want any of the glory for himself but wants to help his friend get through something. It's beautiful, and every time I watch it, I can forget about the swords or the fire or the magic. It helps that I like that aesthetic as well, and I've always been into fantasy, and I understand why those things would get in the way of someone maybe enjoying it. But at its core, This is a story about love and unity and friendship and solidarity, and that's why it's so successful. That's why Harry Potter is so successful. That's why Star Wars is so successful, because it speaks to people everywhere.
Right. It's just the storytelling of it. It's so like the first half just go. It's like plods along.
And we're talking about Fellowship specifically now.
Fellowship specifically, okay. Which is my favorite of all three. I think the second one, the Two Towers. It suffers horribly from the CGI, and the aesthetic sort of takes a nosedive, and also the introduction of Gollum, who I really don't care for as a character and as brought to life by Andy Serkis. People are trying to reclaim that as the best one. Anyway,
sure. But like you have a specific hatred for Andy Serkis as Gollum. I know that.
I do, but then I was really won over when we rewatched Return of the King. It does test you the lengthwise, but you know, my beef with it isn't that it's got too many endings. I'm not going to say any hack kind of criticisms. There's not too many endings for that. There's maybe one too many ending. But that was one of our great arguments. How many endings was too many?
Yeah.
But anyway, Fellowship I think is the best. But I think Fellowship really kicks off when the Fellowship get together and they head off.
When they're at Rivendell, and then, you know, you meet Boromir for the first time, you meet Gimli and Legolas and these guys who you're going to come to love over time.
Right. And I understand story. I understand you've got to lay out your table and bring everyone together and you want to earn that moment. That's fine. I'm not going to say it takes too long. It takes as long as it's supposed to. But the film really gets going then.
Yes. You shall be the Fellowship of the Ring.
Right. And they say the name of the film.
They say the name of the film.
And you clap.
Yeah. I will say, this interval, actually, I will say, when I was... when did the first film come out? 2001?
2001, yeah.
2001. So I was 10 or 11 years old. I was in the cinema watching this film. And when Sam and Frodo and the other hobbits arrive at Rivendell, and Frodo wakes up, Gandalf's there, and he says, Gandalf, where were you? And Ian McKellen says, I was delayed. You know, throughout those scenes, there's a moment where Sam and Frodo are talking to each other And Sam, you can see Sam's a little bit uncertain. And Frodo says, "What's wrong? I thought you wanted to meet the elves. I thought you wanted to come to Rivendell more than anything." And he says, I did. But I want to go home now, Mr. Frodo, you know? And I thought, as a 10-year-old, I was like, oh, the film's over. That's the end of the film. This was a good film. This was really good. I liked it. It was good fun. It's a bit short. Yeah. I thought, like, but I honestly felt like I'd been at the cinema for like an hour and a half already at that point.
And you had.
And I had. And then the fellowship bit starts. I go, oh, the film's not over. And I remember distinctly, it was the first time I'd seen a film that wasn't over an hour and a half in when I thought it was over. And that was the most exciting thing in the world to me at the time as a 10-year-old, you know.
It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo. The ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad happened?
Victory! We had victory!
But in the end, it's only a passing thing. This shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it'll shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you. That meant something. Even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going. Because they were holding on to something.
What are we holding on to, Sam?
That there's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo. And it's worth fighting for.
Yeah, but that's when I really started to enjoy it. There's so many superb sequences. A superb sequence follows a superb sequence after in that middle bit.
Yeah,
they head off. They're walking through. It's a bit montagey, but it looks great. The shots, and then it's everything's going to drive them down through the mines of Moria.
So you will try to go over the mountain, Gandalf.
And Gimli says enough like, oh, I can't wait, mate. I can't wait for you to meet these fucking dwarves in the mountain, mate. Oh, they're so great. I can't wait for you to meet my fucking cousin, mate. Oh, he's great. It's like, I wonder
he's
going to
put on a feast for us. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. I can't. I wonder, Gimli. I think you might have it wrong. And then, of course, it just gets better and better. I keep thinking my favourite bit is after that, when they're outdoors after the Balrog, which we'll talk about.
Yeah.
But that moment when they're in the, it's like the cavern with the well.
Oh, yes. God.
What's he called?
Tuk. Pippin or Merry.
It's
Tuk. Pippin, I think.
Tuk. He's a Tuk.
Peregrine Tuk. It's Oh, yeah, yes,
I like to call him Tuk.
It's Pippin.
Yeah, but I call him Tuk.
No, we'll call him Pippin. Okay, out of respect.
Well, Pippin. You know? Yeah. Pippin bloody knocks over a skeleton down there.
Yeah. And it clatters through the mines, and you see these shots of different parts of Moria, and you hear the sound. It's butt clenching, that scene, isn't it? It's done really, really well.
It's really interesting with Tuk and his buddy from Lost,
Dominic Monaghan.
Dominic Monaghan. You think you're both like really shit, but then they're not, because that scene, Tuk, the face he pulls, it's absolutely fantastic acting.
They're amazing. Tell you what, man, there's a reason why on every year where these guys get together and go and talk to an audience or whatever, it's the four of them together. There's a reason. Those two, like Merry and Pippin, earn their legacy in the film. They are fantastic, and not only are they light relief, they also provide some incredibly somber moments in the follow-up films as well. Way more than just a comedy duo.
Absolutely. And so you're like, oh no, it on the surface it does feel like they could be annoying and dismissible, but then Tuk
whatever his name is, he pulls that's a wonderful bit. And then Sean Bean comes in and goes, they've got a cave troll.
They've got a cave troll.
Oh, Sean Bean.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Can we talk about Bean?
Yeah, let's go on. Let's talk about Bean because I brought up Bean.
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 Fuck me, man. Bean. Come on. Bean steals the film. Bean steals the film. I know much was made of his death scene, how many arrows it take. You know, that was the original joke before how many endings as Lord of the Rings allowed. It was like, how many arrows does it take to bring down Boromir? The scene, the sequence of scenes where there's a slow build up of his toxicity. You see that the ring is taking over Boromir. You see it from the moment that he first lays eyes on it in Rivendell, and then up until, what, you know, an hour and a half later when he asks Frodo to take it. I ask only for the strength to defend my people, he says. And then Frodo puts the ring on, kicks him away. And you see that moment, he crumbles, he cries, he realizes what he's done, and then he runs down the hill and decides to sacrifice himself to save the other hobbits, to do the right thing at the last. Sean Bean, no one else could do that. Sean Bean does that so beautifully. It's fantastic. And when he's standing opposite Viggo Mortensen, when he's acting alongside Ian McKellen, who wins an Oscar for this film, by the way, and whose line readings are just like fucking perfect. Everything he says is perfect. Sean Bean steals the film away from these people, and he's in it for, what, 60 minutes, maybe? He is fucking wonderful in this film.
Before that, there's the great bit where they're on the snowy mountain, and Frodo tumbles down and Boromir picks it up. And it's like they're really making a meal of it. But then when he finally... Frodo's such a little like, get your hands off my ring. And you're like, chill out, mate. You're not the fucking centre of the universe. Boromir, like, he hasn't done anything wrong. Everyone's looking at Boromir like he's the biggest cunt in the world. He's protecting this little shit to take the fucking ring back. And Frodo gets the ring and Bean just, he sort of says, you know, I don't mind. Just,
I care not.
But you see, I care not. And you really see... You really see he does care.
He does care. And if in that moment as well, you wonder, like, does he care about the ring? Or is the ring making him care in a sense where actually he's kind of pissed off at other people for even thinking that he cares? Do you know what I mean? That's where the toxicity is. That's the power of the ring. The power of the ring convinces him. He's like, hang on a second. These fucking cunts think that I'm trying to steal the... In front of all of them. How dare they? The gall, you know? It's wonderful. And that's why I love... You know, and it's very root one. It's very obvious. But that's why I love the kind of, you know, the theme of addiction throughout these films. Because that's exactly how addiction gets people thinking. Like that. Like insular. Like they're alone. They're, you know... And that's what Boromir is, just this fantastic, fantastic character. His character arc is very, 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 very slowly... going down, 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 and then all of a sudden an explosion back up to an absolutely magnificent death scene. Fantastic.
And then he says something about, he calls them like the little ones. He must save the little ones.
I tried to save the little ones. They took the little ones.
They took the little ones.
I tried to save them, but I couldn't. I tried to take the ring from Frodo, you know? Oh, my God.
It's good stuff. And then I tell you what though. Then the Balrog, the old Balrog,
the Balrog. Yeah,
it really is.
I feel like you're trying to joke that it's called the Bullfrog.
No,
no. Okay, good.
And there's no joking about the Balrog. It's not talked. I don't feel it's like talked about enough. The Balrog.
What are you doing? Is this some bit where you don't feel the Balrog is talked about enough?
Do you think the Balrog is talked about enough?
Because I think people disrespect on the Balrog, you know?
It is one of the great creature designs, and also not just that, evocations of a mythical beast in cinema. I don't think it's actually been, mythical-wise, I don't think it's been topped because... No. It's fucking phenomenal. It kind of creates... I had to message you about it. That's true,
you did.
It's the void. It gives you the sense of absence as well. It's so black, none more black, and yet you can see its edges. It's over 25... It's nearly 25 years old, and it looks absolutely fucking amazing.
Yeah, it does. I'm just on a Reddit thread. Which artist drew the Balrog? Apparently, Jonathan Howe... and Alan Lee together. John Howe drew most of the dark-related things. Alan Lee, most of the light. So I think that's where the original drawing comes from, which is the flame and then the sort of the shadow. This is before the Balrog sort of steps out in the film. Those original illustrations just have his outline sort of as a shadow. But I feel that one of the things I like about it so much also is that it's so original. You don't really see, like, you know, most of those kind of mythical big sort of mega creature bad monster things that you see in modern cinema, most of them have their roots in like either ancient Egyptian, ancient Greek stories. So, you know, something that's like relatively similar to a Sphinx, something like a fucking, what, not a cyborg, what do they call them, the ones with the one eyes, you know, a cyclops, yeah, something like that. Whereas the Balrog is like, it's very unique. It's very original. It feels very kind of, it feels like it's straight out of Middle Earth. Do you know what I mean? It feels like it belongs to the land of Middle Earth, doesn't it?
It feels like the dwarves have been digging too deep and they've unearthed this thing.
That's right. What does Saruman say? He says, you know what? The dwarves awoke in there. With their greed, they dug too deep, one gem too many, or something like that. And, you know, the little drums in the deep. Oh,
Tolkien, he hates capitalism, doesn't he? He hates men, greed, and all that kind of gubbins. Fair dues, mate. Of course, it's a rubbish stuff. I don't like it either.
Well, he hated industrialization, didn't he? I think that was the thing. He was very much wandering lonely as a cloud, a lovely little daffodil on a hill. He was a man after William Wordsworth's heart. I don't think he enjoyed the destruction of nature. In fact, when I play the video game Civilization VI, which is like an empire building game, there are various different characters, historical leaders within the game. I can't remember the name of this one, but he's of the Maui, and his specific starting power is that he starts in the middle of the ocean, which is very unusual. Every other character that you play as starts on land. Anyway, all of these characters will have something that they don't like that you do when they are the computer and you are a human player. And so it might be something as silly as, you know, Julius Caesar's like, hey, why haven't you got a bigger army, you fuck? Like, he doesn't like it when you don't have a big army, and he gets pissed off and sours your relations with him. The Maui guy, he's like, he doesn't like it when you rip up any trees. He loves nature. He loves keeping it exactly the same. And if you build something on a tree, he's going to fucking get you and hunt you down. And that's how I feel about J.R.R. Tolkien. He didn't like cities, didn't like industrialization. He wanted to keep nature. He wanted to keep it pure. And I think, you know, you see these examples are littered all throughout Lord of the Rings. Mordor is the obvious example where there's this, you know, horrible like militarization of the you know, industrial nature of it, and they rip all the trees down around Isengard. But in the Mines of Moria is another. The dwarves, they were too greedy and they dug too deep with their metal and their pickaxes and they're trying to get gold. They dug too deep and they awoke this monster of the deep.
And then what? He's just like hanging around down there, like, get a life, Balrog.
Get a life. Yeah. Spread Why your doesn't wings. He leave? Get out.
Do something. Get some sun on you.
Find a lady, Balrog. You know.
Yeah. What? Yeah. What? Like, you talked about industrialization there and Tolkien. Orcs, right? It's the first time that it occurred to me, and it's not going to be an original thought. There'll be some Reddit thread about it, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. But there's a chat about, like, someone says, do you know what orcs are, right? Mm-hmm. You know what orcs are? Orcs are just elves.
They were elves once.
They've been tortured.
Yeah.
And I soaked that in, and I thought, well, hang on a sec. You're saying that orcs are just kind of creatures of their environment, and they're traumatized, and what, we're supposed to hate these orcs? I mean, shouldn't we put an arm around the shoulder and make them better? Why are we going to other them, are we, JRR? We're going to other them and just spare them, because, you know, don't they just need a hug?
I mean, I think that's very true. And I really love that you're working on your next Type 5. I think that's going to go down fantastically well on stage. You know, hey guys, don't orcs just need a cuddle too? Aren't orcs the product of trauma? I think they are. I'm reading now, of course, in J.R.R. Tolkien's Middle Earth, the origins of orcs are inconsistent, but they are primarily described as tortured and corrupted elves, specifically the Avari, or men, bred by the Dark Lord Morgoth during the First Age to serve as his army. They were designed as a mockery of the children of Ilúvatar, and according to Tolkien Gateway, they were reproduced sexually with female orcs existing. So I don't know. I think obviously, you know, what the
Tolkien's
film...
fucking making so much stuff out. He's got lore, and he's just like, yeah, no, it's that, and it's also a little bit of this. Like, does he give a shit about lore?
Well, he certainly does, because there are whole texts outside of the Lord of the Rings trilogy itself that are dedicated to the lore. Incidentally, none of which I'm interested in or care about at all. Like, I think there's two distinct types of Lord of the Rings fans, in my opinion. So there's fans like Stephen Colbert, the American late night TV show host, for example, who loves Lord of the Rings and also is completely literate in every single element of lore, and, you know, shows it off and displays it whenever he has a cast member come on his show and do an interview. So he, you know, he's read the I think they call it the Silmarillion. I think that's the
Silmarillion, yeah, something.
Yeah,
like
the Silmarillion or the Silmarillion, I think it's called.
Silmarillion.
That's a completely separate text that has all of this history in it. There's all descriptions of what Gandalf actually is, for example, which is a kind of like demigod thing. I don't know. Sauron's sort of the same. There's all the different hierarchies and the levels of it. I don't care about any of that. I'm the other type of Lord of the Rings fan, which is someone who loves the story and really enjoys like watching the films and reading it. That's it. I don't care about the lore. I'm not interested in understanding every single detail of the thing. I want to absorb the meaning of the story and enjoy the narrative without sort of getting bogged down in like exactly how many female orcs there are or what kind of torture you have to do to an elf to corrupt it into being an orc, you know. And it's similarly, I it's one of my it's another area in which I praise these films, because I think one thing that Peter Jackson does really, really well is, without disrespecting the lore and without disrespecting or upsetting the fans who love that stuff, he really, really has a finger on the pulse of what matters for the story and what doesn't. There's a bit in the second film where he shows Saruman growing Uruk-hai, which are like his own kind of evolution of orcs, and, you know, birthing them under this weird mud. And that creates these one or two like really fantastic cinematic scenes where you see these like massive horrible monsters crawling out of mud, being born out of some kind of strange fake uterus. But he never really explains beyond a line of dialogue or poetic dialogue or two what they are, why he's created them, how he's done it. Peter Jackson knows this is boring. This is not interesting to a mainstream audience. Let's just show, hey, and then they got these big slippery mud guys and then you knew things were real. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fellowship, right? And it's basically, the suggestion is, oh, orcs can only knock about at nighttime, and he's bred a gang,
right,
that can walk about in the daylight.
And daywalkers.
Yeah. Daywalkers.
And they're bigger and badder than ever. And also, you know, they say really funny things like, meat's back on the menu, boys, in one of the great all-time Lord of the Rings lines. That's in the second film.
There's great creature design in terms of the Balrog, but the Uruk-hai, they're just Predator rip-offs. And it all comes back to Predator.
I mean, it definitely doesn't all come back to Predator.
I mean, in this case, it sort of does, but...
You know, Tolkien drew them all before Predator was ever even made, right? You understand that? If anything, we're saying that Predator was a rip-off of Tolkien, just like almost every other fantasy element.
So anyway, what's interesting about J.R.R. Tolkien is like how he expanded the lore and like told the history of everything.
Yeah.
And then that's like the problem of modern franchises now. Like, you know, certainly what happened to Star Wars. Like, let's find out what the backstory of this character really is. And he's already done it. Not only has he predated the Predator and predicted the Predator, he's also predated and predicted and been a man ahead of his time in terms of lore.
That's right. He was a man ahead of his time in terms of someone not knowing when to stop getting lost in their own world that they've created and then doing it beyond the point where most people are interested in finding out more. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he was the first guy to do that. So doff of the cap.
I would say the people who wrote the Bible went pretty hard on that as well. But no, I agree in terms of modern like stories and media. That's for sure the case. And again, like you have that core of super fans who absolutely fucking love that shit and want to eat it up more, nom 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 nom. And then you have most normal people, normal fans, who, you know, at some point decide to stop sort of being invested in the Star Wars universe, or they become educated viewers and fans in a sense where they sort of develop a kind of sixth sense about what's worth investing their time in and what isn't. It's teenagers really that want more and more and more of everything. I think once you become an adult, with films and with stories like this is knowing when to stop and knowing when not to spoil it, or when not to, you know, not to keep wanting more, not to ask for more.
And then, I mean, the whole thing with films is it's a film, it's not a book. And then, you know, he did his extended editions, which I haven't seen, but you have. And like, you're like, oh, they wanted more, let's give them more. You don't
stop
like
giving
them,
people
you?
More. No, I don't like them because the theatrical edits have a musicality to them that is completely disregarded in the extended editions. And the reason you cut all that shit is because it wasn't necessary to follow the story. If it was, no one would have been able to follow the story. Everyone enjoyed the films. That they were a great success was a good affirmation that you cut stuff that didn't need to be there. So I think adding it back in, it's fine. Like, you know, I don't mind there being extended editions for mega fans who want to watch that stuff and want to sit around and talk about the lore. Absolutely fantastic. I don't like this notion that the extended editions are the main one that I find on Amazon when I'm looking for the fucking film, or like where they you know, you have people that say, oh, you really have to watch the extended editions. Like, you must watch the director's cut of, what's that one that we did?
Kingdom of Heaven.
You know, if you're not watching the redux of, what's that one in Vietnam?
Now.
Yeah, Apocalypse Now. Oh, I wish I could remember things. So this bit
don't worry,
would be
that's
funnier.
What I'm here, Joe. Don't yeah. worry, I'll sort it out.
If you're not watching the redux of Apocalypse Now, then you've simply made the wrong choice that day. It's like, no, fuck off. There's a reason a theatrical version is a theatrical version. It is the collaborative combination of people who love getting lost up their own arse and making art, and people who love telling those people to cut this bullshit out. And somewhere in the middle, there's a magical story. Lord of the Rings is Peter Jackson's theatrical cut. It's fucking art. It's magnificent. One of the greatest things ever created, in my opinion.
Yeah, but in terms of the story of the storytelling, I was praising the middle section, which is fantastic. But you do start to recognise there's a. It's just like action sequence, then they have a rest,
yeah,
and then yeah. they like all just linger around and have a chat, and like yeah. Frodo looks willowy, and then they gear up and have a little bit more action. And then they have another rest.
Yeah.
And it's just very up and down.
This is just
and
a film. That's what you're describing as a film. You know that, right?
Right. But in those down bits, they're so boring. Like the Cate Blanchett bit, it's just like, you're in this because you're in the books. I've already right. seen this bit. I've already been in the elves section.
The dwarf breathed so loudly, we could have shot him in the dark. Yeah? You like that?
Yeah, that's good, but it's just like this bit is just like, oh, is this the only way you could get another woman back in the movie?
Oh,
it's pathetic.
God.
So, like, when I'm watching Predator, right, it's got the same up and down, right? Mm-hmm. But when it's down,
yep.
it's got tension because they're like, oh, what's going to happen? Is that thing going to come and get us? And it's pure tension, or they're planning stuff, or they're making traps. In this one, in Fellowship of the Rings, they're just looking around going, oh, God, what are we going to do? Oh, we're going to get helped. Oh, what should we do later?
You're such a dick. What should we do later? Oh, what should we have for dinner?
Oh, make sure you bring those dry biscuits.
The Lamba's bread.
There was a bit where I realised I had to retune about how I was watching it. Because yeah. it's that middle bit, and Frodo's been shivved by the sword
on Weathertop.
Aragorn's just nipped off apparently for no apparent reason.
He's nipped off, yeah.
And the other hobbits are just cooking up a fry up,
yeah,
because they're idiots.
I love that scene, by the way. They say, look, we got sausages, tomatoes, nice tasty tomatoes, Mr. Frodo. Put it out, you fools! Put it out!
Put it out! So he wakes up and he's all better. It's fine. That wound will stay with him forever.
So he's in Rivendell now.
Yeah, Rivendell.
Yeah. Okay.
And then he meets Bilbo again.
Yeah.
And Bilbo says, "Here's something for you,
Mithril.
is a lovely little plot device that will just stop. It's a bulletproof vest, yeah, basically.
It will sit snugly over your nipples, and then hopefully the audience will forget about it, and then they'll be reminded of it later when you get stabbed by a cave troll.
And I thought, oh, it's a bit late for that now, isn't it, Bilbo? Why don't you give him that at the beginning? And then I thought, hang on a sec. No, come on.
Check myself.
Adam. This is, you're watching in bad faith. Maybe that little elf top was at Rivendell.
Maybe it was.
And that's probably why, all right? Don't be a cunt when you're watching this movie, okay?
Sure,
it's fine.
Or any number of reasons. For example, you know, Ian Holm, Bilbo leaves the Shire, not thinking that Frodo, you know, thinking Frodo's completely safe, you know. Whereas he's stepping into the unknown. He needs the Mithril.
Absolutely, yeah. So I'm already, you know, I had this like little horrible little voice trying to go find little. And as soon as I thought that and thought, hang on a sec, you fucked it. I did manage, maybe then that's why I start to really enjoy that middle section, because I was watching it in good faith.
I agree. Well, do you know what's interesting about good faith is there's a fantastic quote that I think is about this exact thing. I'm going to read it to you now, okay?
Mm.
Frodo says this. Frodo says of Gollum, he says, "It's a pity Bilbo didn't kill him when he had the chance." And then Gandalf says, "Pity?
Pity? Pity's what stayed his hand.
It was pity that stayed Bilbo's hand. Many that live deserve death. Some that die deserve life. Can you give it to them, Frodo? Do not be so eager to deal out death in judgment. Even the very wise cannot see all ends. My heart tells me that Gollum has some part to play yet, for good or ill, before this is over. The pity of Bilbo may rule the fate of many." You know? And in that sense, that's exactly why he didn't have the Mithril to give him, or didn't give it to him at the right time. Do you know what I'm saying? Can you stay the hand? No, you can't, you coward.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough.
Do you want to play a game?
Ooh, yes, please.
This is called the quote judgment game, okay? Now, as you know, I love all the quotes from Lord of the Rings because I love Lord of the Rings. And I somewhat believe that that might make me not hugely objective into whether this is actually good screenwriting or whether I just love them and I love the line readings and the performances involved. So here's the game. It's not really a game. It's more of a quiz. I read you the quote and you rate it out of 10 and tell me whether it's good or not, okay?
Yep.
Right, let's start with this. Some of them are two people quotes, okay? This one's Frodo and Gandalf talking to each other, and it starts with Frodo. He says, "I wish the ring had never come to me."
Oh, no, do it in his voice.
Oh, he says, "I wish the ring had never come to me. I wish none of this had happened." And then Gandalf says, "So do all who live to see such times, but that is not for them to decide. All we have to decide is what to do with the time that is given to us."
Yeah, I mean, that's the equivalent of saying live, life, love, Gandalf. Frodo's line is fantastic. I wish the ring had never come. The way he says that is fantastic.
Right. Yeah.
As soon as Gandalf starts giving that like sloppy aphorism of like, "Where did you?" It's like, oh, piss off. Put that on a tea towel, mate.
Oh, my God. Okay. What about this one? Here we go. So right out of 10?
It's the Frodo bit is so strong. It's a 7.
Okay, fine. Here we go. This is just Gandalf now. Of course, he's standing on the bridge in front of the Balrog. You know what I'm going to say. He says, "You cannot pass. I am a servant of the secret fire, wielder of the flame of Anor. The dark fire will not avail you. Flame of Odin, go back to the shadow. You shall not pass."
I mean, go back to the shadow, you shall not pass. Oh. It's a 9.
He says it, go back to the shadow.
Yeah, but the other bits are a little bit like, the what of the what? The who of the who?
But the way that Ian McKellen says it, it doesn't even matter what he's saying, does it? Like, sure. I would listen to him say anything in that way. Absolutely fantastic. Okay, what about this one? Here we go, Samwise Gamgee now. You ready? He says, "I made a promise, Mr. Frodo. A promise. Don't you leave him, Samwise Gamgee. And I don't mean to. I don't mean to."
I don't mean to. You don't mean to what? I mean, just like, get away from me, you creep. You're so clingy and needy.
Oh, no. That's just, you've taken it too far.
He's made, like, he doesn't, like, Gandalf just says that casually, right? At the beginning of the movie. Like, oh, watch that pot. It's going to boil over.
That's true.
And like Samwise has taken that so literally of like, he'll just sort of stand there and stay there for the rest of the movie. But instead, Gandalf has said, "What the pot is Frodo." He said, "Watch that pot, watch that Frodo."
Right. And don't you leave
Samwise,
him.
Samwise, he's so
Don't make sure you don't leave him. Don't leave him.
Make sure you don't leave him.
Yeah. Gandalf meant like, don't leave and come back to the Shire or something.
Don't try and drown. Do try and drown yourself in a bid to not leave him.
Right. But I like it. It's loyalty. Yeah. Come on. Out of 10.
I think that's a 5.
That's ridiculous. Okay, here's Boromir. One does not simply walk into Mordor.
That's a 2.
Oh,
that's,
fuck off, man.
It's so... I think it's not the line's fault.
There is evil
that
there
fucking...
that does not sleep, and the great eye is ever watchful. It's a barren wasteland riddled with fire and ash and dust. The very air you breathe is a poisonous fume. Not with 10,000 men could you do this. It is folly.
Okay, yeah, that's 10. But it's 10. Like the first line, the first bit, which is just memed to fuck, is just like, get rid. Everything else, it's folly. Give it a 10.
Okay.
Lovely use of the word folly.
Lovely use of the word folly. Here's one of my favourites early on in the film from Bilbo to his party guests. He says, "I don't know half of you half as well as I should like, and I like less than half of you half as well as you deserve." Come on, that's a fantastic line, isn't it?
Who says that?
Bilbo says it in his speech at the beginning, you know? After he shouts out all the names of the hobbits, he shouts their names out and they go, "Yay!" He says, "Balfried and Proudfeet." And the man shouts, "Proudfeet!" You know?
I really like Ian Holm as an actor, but I don't like... And he's inextricably linked to the character of Bilbo. I think he read, The Hobbit. He's played The Hobbit, on radio or whatever.
Yeah.
But he plays Bilbo as a bit of a kind of annoying little...
He's a fucking recovering addict, man. What are you going to do, That's, most of him is just, he's either high on drugs or he's immediately, jonesing for drugs. That's all he is in the film until the very end when he's basically got dementia.
Yeah.
Hobbit dementia. I think I'm ready for another adventure.
He killed a dragon.
Yeah.
And then
true.
His story's become a footnote of a bigger story. I would be livid if I was Bilbo. All that shit, he gets the vest and he gets the sword and then he has to pass it on to this little...
You like the idea that your children are going to do a really famous film podcast in the future that will far outstrip anything that you've ever done, and you'll be seething about it in your old person's home, thinking, "I'm not listening. Mine was better. Why does no one listen to mine anymore?" Let me see if I can find one more.
What do they say when they get to the Mines of Moria again? So there's like some kind of riddle out the front, isn't there?
Oh, you're such a dick.
I can't remember what it is. It's something like speak truth and enter.
Oh.
It's a riddle. Speak friend and enter. What's the Elvish word for friend?
Do you think any blame can be, not full blame, but is there any responsibility that we can put at the feet of the Lord of the Rings for the popularization of extended film franchise making? Like, it was never enough to... I know sequels and adaptations of popular IP, as they call it, wasn't invented by the Fellowship of the Ring, but the fact that they shot these back to back and released them like 1 year after the other, and is this they were so successful, which is great, but then that's like that gave Hollywood the green light to be like, well, this is what we want now. We want these. We don't just want one movie. That's not enough. We want the whole set, because if you get the first one, great, you can double your money, but then it just starts to, by a factor of whatever, you can make even more money if you make 3 of the fuckers.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think the reason what you say is interesting is because there's two sort of things happening here simultaneously. in different directions, right? On the one hand, I think you're right. I think Lord of the Rings, it didn't prove, but it reminded people, or it was the biggest example of its time to remind studios that if you get it right, there's just the rewards are enormous, and you can create something which is really, 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 really going to make you a lot of money. So I think there's that, and I think it will have directly inspired the likes of Marvel, for example, to try and build on that in terms of creating a cinematic universe and trying to, you know, draw in these interconnected things. I think it will have been part of an inspiration for future studio work like that. The other thing, though, is it's also described as the last of its kind. You know, there are these stories of Peter Jackson and the producers trying to find a studio to work with them on this film. And of course, I think one of the other conversations that we would have had in the lost tapes was about Peter Jackson himself as a director who, listeners may not realize that prior to The Lord of the Rings, he wasn't a hugely well-known director. He was largely the director of like some Hollywood horror B movies, that some of which were, you know, fantastic, but none of which had made significant amounts of money. He was not the kind of director that today would be banked on for, you know, a huge project like this. And he and his colleagues went around town trying to find a studio that wanted to give them the money to do it, not just to do it, but to do it in his way, which was to film all three at the same time. And to do them simultaneously, by the way, not one by one, all in New Zealand, which meant that many of these actors were in New Zealand for almost a year. You know, one of the reasons that their rap parties were so emotional, and that, you know, there are these fantastic stories of all of the main, you know, the lead actors on their final shoot, some of them almost unable to do their take because they were so sad to be leaving behind people that had become, you know, what felt like family to them over the long period of time that they were there. Anyway, you know, it wasn't until Peter Jackson and co. found New Line Cinema. It was, you know, I always think this is a bit like that Lee Evans joke where he says, why are your keys always in the last place you look for them? You know, because you wouldn't continue looking after you found them. But New Line Cinema was the last studio that Peter Jackson and his colleagues went to see. I think they were somewhat surprised that they got this off the ground. It seemed like a project that was doomed to fail, that would never be taken off. All of the leading main studios at the time had said no. And I think these days, if you think that like someone who's just made a couple of B movies, who hasn't got a record of making huge amounts of money, is going to go and say, cool, let me spend hundreds of millions of dollars, take all of these actors to New Zealand. By the way, the leads in this film are unknowns. You won't know them. This is a bit like Star Wars all over again.
Not Elijah Wood.
Relatively speaking, you know. Elijah Wood wasn't a big star. It wasn't a big star.
No, but they're not nobodies. They're not like pulled off the street. It's not the fucking Safdies.
Sure, okay. They're not nobodies. But the point is, can I spend hundreds of millions of dollars to make a film without stars? The most famous person in this film is Ian McKellen, right? I mean, and Ian McKellen's a fucking British theatre actor who prior to this, sure, was a famous actor, but Lord of the Rings catapulted Ian McKellen into global stardom. Prior to that, he was, you know, he's a fucking Shakespeare actor. That's what he is, that's what he was. So as well as it being a huge, I'm sure, inspiration from a business perspective for future studios and future filmmakers, it was also probably the last of its kind, the last of a film or series to be made in this way. And I imagine that every, you know, IP extended film that has been created since The Lord of the Rings has been done with the studio one eye on possible sequels and, oh, imagine if this one works out. How many times have we seen it? Stuff like The Maze Runner, for example, where they're just desperately trying to will something to life because they want to recreate this magic, and they can't because Lord of the Rings is unique.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point because they basically took all the wrong lessons from why it was successful.
What do you think they took, and why do you think it was successful? What did they not take that they should have done?
Well, they took let's buy a series of books.
Yeah,
that's what they took.
That's
and
what
we
they
can
took.
Make all of them.
Yeah,
and what they missed was the important thing was, well, like you say, Peter Jackson was the guy who was trying to make this. It's the artist with the vision, and letting them do it.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said about it. You know, that it was made by an artistic visionary. I agree with you completely. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. It clearly was. I was a big Peter Jackson fan before it came out.
Yeah,
of course. I'd seen Heavenly Creatures. I'd seen Braindead. Braindead. I love that. You know?
Yeah.
And I want, it's more over the movies that he makes here. He sort of is.
Well, I will say, on the point that you made, that they took all the wrong lessons from it, I think never a truer word spoken. And I never fail to be surprised by the extent to which people who are copying things fundamentally do not understand them. And I believe strongly that the act of original work and creativity is the thing that helps understanding. If you copy something that someone else has done, you could never truly understand what it is or why it works because you don't create it. You don't go through the process of making this thing. I can completely see why, like, heads of studios and people with money would look at Lord of the Rings in the same way that people with money look at football clubs. And they see numbers and they see things that they think they can understand, that they think are simple. And it turns out they don't understand them at all because art's difficult to get your hands around.
Yeah, I mean, and also fair play to Fellowship and I guess the sequels. Like, nothing really looked like this before it looked like that.
Sure.
Like, it is, as soon as you see it, like, of course this is what Middle Earth looks like. And of course that's what, because he's just taken the books. But he's, to visualize it and bring that all to life, using all the forced perspective. That's the fun game me and my wife were playing. We were playing, as soon as it would cut to a wide, we would say, if it was a small person or a child,
if it was
forced perspective.
Yeah.
That's a fun game to play.
Is it child or forced perspective?
Exactly. Is it child? Oh, no, is it an old person?
You see the children, like the one thing that I think is so, you know, so funny about the final ending of Lord of the Rings in the third film, where Frodo and Gandalf and Bilbo get on the last boat to leave and cross to the Undying Lands. Frodo's saying goodbye to his friends, and it's an incredibly sad scene. Sam doesn't understand why he wants to leave, and Frodo utters one of my favourite lines in Lord of the Rings, which is, "We set out to save the Shire, and we did, but not for me." Oh, I fucking love that. It's such a fantastic line. And then, you know, they all cry and they share a hug, and I'm weeping at home. And then Frodo turns around and it cuts to the wide shot and I'm looking at four children with wigs on and Ian McKellen shepherding one of them onto the boat. Like, it's, in that moment, it's so obvious. I forgive it because it's a beautiful end to a film. And in some ways, it's kind of a funny, like, honouring of this thing that they've done throughout where they're like, yeah, we'll just put the kids in wigs. It's fine, we'll put the kids in wigs. But there's something very pantomime about that.
Kids in wigs, but then that is why it's art. Yeah, it's charming,
and they can't recapture it. You know, it'll be the same with the Harry Potter TV series that they're making, and the Amazon Lord of the Rings show, and all of these things.
The Hobbit, the three Hobbit movies.
They were just fucking atrocious. You know, they were terrible.
See, how does the same filmmaker make those?
Because we set out to save the Shire, Sam, and we did, but not for me.
Right, so then Peter Jackson is that suddenly turned into Samwise Gamgee and's gone, oh no, come on, let's have another mission.
Yeah, you were supposed to leave. You understand? You get through the end of this thing. Come on, everyone's done it in their life, right? They've done something, they've left it behind, they've gone back and tried to recapture it. I mean, there's films about this stuff, there's books written about this. There's midlife crises focused on this, right? You cannot recapture a moment. You got to kiss goodbye to something and let it go.
Yeah, Guillermo del Toro was supposed to direct The Hobbit.
Was he?
And I think he'd done all the work on it. And I get the sense that Peter Jackson, he just couldn't let it go.
Couldn't let it go. You get that sense, let it do you? Go. Have you read?
I get that sense.
You read that, or you just think that?
I think that. Why else would Guillermo put in 2 years worth of work on a film to then just walk away?
Yeah, maybe he realised it was going to be shit.
Well, because he's got like Peter Jackson hovering over him going, I've done this before. Maybe you want to do it like this. All right, mate. I think you should do it like this, mate. He's probably more New Zealand. New Zealand? Is it more like this?
Fashion chaps.
I like to use a little child for every single shot.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hi, is that Guillermo?
Hello, yes, speaking.
Hi, Guillermo. It's Peter again. Sorry, I know I've called a few times this morning.
So, yeah, We're just having a pre-production meeting.
Oh yeah,
Peter. Right. Sorry. What?
Because I can come to those if you want. I've got quite a lot of good input to give. As you know, I made Lord of the Rings, and I want to respect you. I want you're a terrific filmmaker. I respect you. But also, I was sitting at home and I was thinking, I just wondered if you'd got the if you found I. Put it this way, I was drape shopping at the weekend and I found the perfect cloth for Bilbo's cape, and I just thought I should share this. Guillermo won't mind if I share this with him, because you know that's like a I can call the costume department directly if you want. I don't have to go through you. I just want to respect the hierarchy and stuff. And,
Peter, you say that I know you've already emailed the swatch to Jessica. You know, you keep going right behind my back.
I didn't realize
she came straight to me, and I feel like you're now calling to save face. This has happened again and again. You've sent her the swatch for Bilbo's cloak.
Right.
You've sent through shavings for like the kind of hair that you want on Bilbo's feet.
That was from my body.
Yeah, and I think we knew that from the smell, but. I don't see how I'm supposed to make... This is supposed to be my... This is Guillermo del Toro's Hobbit.
And for the record, when I sent that swatch... What's it? What did you call it?
A swatch.
Yeah. I just call it a cloth in my... When I was making Lord of the Rings. I didn't know... I don't know the fancy words. A swatch. When I sent it, I was actually trying... I was trying to save it in drafts. You know? But then I accidentally pressed send at the wrong time, and it got sent out. So that was an accident. I'm not calling you to. I mean, I am calling you to say I knew that had happened. It's embarrassing as well. But
I can't work like this. Right. I've got this.
But what you're saying is she looked at it and she didn't immediately, because if she didn't immediately think that's right, even if she didn't like the way in which it had come about, I question whether she's the right person for this. And I'm very disappointed that she's gone behind my back to you.
She's not gone behind your back. She works for me.
Well, no, but she's gone behind my back to talk to you, because I was in a dialogue with her, and then she's secretly gone to you behind my back, which is what you're saying I've done to you. I couldn't go behind your back if I'm behind your back and she's behind mine, then what, are we in a love train? What? I'm in the middle, where I should be.
I feel like you think... The Lord of the Rings is like an actual ring, like it's the ring, and like you're Gollum, and like I'm Bilbo, and I've got the ring, and I'm Bilbo, and I'm making a film about Bilbo, and you're like skulking around with ping pong balls all over you, and you've got a stupid voice on, and you're trying to get the ring back, and I'm trying to do something, I'm trying to honor your vision from before, but make it new.
Are you saying Gollum's voice is stupid?
I mean, it is quite stupid.
It's not.
And I'm glad he's not in this. I mean, is he in this one?
You're not putting him in.
Well, I certainly don't have Andy Serkis doing it.
I mean, the marketing alone.
What I decided to do was I went into the middle of the street, closed my eyes, and just like pointed. And when I opened my eyes... I picked them to be Gollum, and I knew that they would be better. Just doing that, I knew would end up in a better outcome.
That's so disrespectful. That's so disrespectful. And by the way, I'm not Gollum. I'm Frodo, and you're going to have to hand me the ring when Gandalf makes you leave. And I'm Gandalf as well. And I'm going, do you know what? I'm going to Eric at New Line, and I'm going to tell him that this isn't working out. Because listen, I'm responsible for one of the biggest ever box office hits in history. I did what they said couldn't be done. What did you do? You did Pan's Labyrinth, you fucking dickhead. What was that? About the Holocaust, was it? No one fucking cares, mate. Ian McKellen won an Oscar because of me.
It's actually about the Spanish Civil War, actually.
I don't care which war it's about. The Holocaust, the Spanish Civil War. They're
fascism.
All bullshit. Yeah, fascism. What do you think's more fascist than Sauron, you prick? Nothing. He's the most fascist. He was the inspiration for all the other fascists. And he came before Hitler.
Yeah, no, you've got me there.
Can we compromise? Can you just look? You just look at the cloak material. I got it in the curtain shop.
Okay.
It's perfect for his cloak. It is.
Oh, right.
And then
just leave it. Can we leave it at the cloak?
Well, yeah, there is one. There's just one more thing, but then I would leave it after that, you know.
What's the extra
thing?
Well,
it's just a small thing. It's just a
what?
It's just there was the cloak, and then there was the fact that I'm going to take over directing the films. I've decided that. Okay. I'm sure that's painful for you. I know you wanted to follow in my footsteps, but actually my feet are still in those steps and you're stepping on me now. That's what I've decided. So it's back to whatever it was that you were doing before, drawing pictures of fucking Frankenstein or something, and back to Spain with you. Is that where you're from? Spain? I don't even care.
Ay, ay, ay. No me gusta.
No me gusta, indeed.
I'm from Mexico. You can't play the box office game for this, can we?
I don't know, can you? I mean, we've done it once before, technically, in the Lost Recordings, but I'm going to wager on the fact that you've forgotten everything about it.
I forgot everything about everything that we talked about, apart from me making fun about eagles.
Yeah.
And I also, when I rewatched this movie, I'd forgotten everything about it. I watched it 2 years ago. I was like, I don't remember any of this, apart from the bullrog and the great bit with the bullrog.
Stop calling it the bullfrog, I swear to God. The balrog. It's not a bull, it's balrog.
Bullrog.
Oh my God.
Bullrog. Get your bullrog on.
Right.
I was just like, oh yeah, this is a plum forgot you forgot, his fellowship. Plop it in the toilet and flush it down.
You're such a dickhead. Right.
I was so annoyed also.
This wouldn't go down the toilet. That's how big it is. It wouldn't get down there. You'd need to call a plumber who'd come round and then be like, why are you trying to flush this, you idiot? This is worth loads of money and you don't even know how much.
I've just done a fellowship and it won't go down.
Don't worry. Soon I'll do two towers and they'll follow it down after, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, it's Return of the King Day.
It's Return of the Turd. Come on, Return of the Turd was right there on your tongue, yeah? On your tongue, because you love eating poop.
No, I don't want to say turd.
Really?
I'd rather say, yeah, it's horrible.
But you love saying horrible words like Johnny and...
Yeah. Johnny's funny.
What's the other word you use all the time that I don't like? Can't remember now. It's like when English people use the P word, you know?
Prick.
No. In reference to the female sex organ.
Pussy.
Yeah. No, don't say it aloud. No.
Oh, do I say it?
When any white English people use the term, there's something so...
I don't use the P word. I don't use that P word.
I know like you don't. That. I know you don't. I'm not
because
saying
Because it's
saying
definitely
you
misogynist.
I agree.
To say that one.
I agree.
Cunt not, but the P word. You can say pussy, though, but you
no,
mean
stop
pussy,
saying
and I wouldn't say
it.
Pussy.
I don't like it when people say it.
If I called someone a pussy, it's like you're saying they're feminine.
I don't like it.
Yeah,
that's,
no, I
course,
don't
that's
either.
What, of course that's what you're saying. I don't like, but it's not about the how rude it is. It's about the sound of it. It's about something. It's something about people saying. It's like the only way to say that word in a way that feels in any way appropriate is to say it inappropriately, is to say it aggressively, right? That's the only, is to, you say, fuck, pussy. You know, that's the only way. It can
oh,
be
that was
used.
It when I talked about skunk pussies.
Oh, God, I didn't like it. Yeah, I didn't like that at all.
S-K-U-N-K-P-U-S-S-Y.
S-K-U-N-K-P-U-S-S-Y.
Yeah, horrible word.
Horrible
not,
word.
Not a fan. Not a fan. But yeah, we should do the box office game because, I forgot.
You forgot everything. Okay, well, brackets estimated budget. I've said that the wrong way around. That's quite confusing, isn't it? Bracket estimated budget. Budget brackets estimated, pour favor, for Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. Now, you'll remember this was a Christmas film, wasn't it? Released December 23, 2001. What are you saying here, boyo?
Well, it's three movies.
Yeah. So they've split, you know, they've done a split. And if I remember rightly, they split evenly between two and three. And this one's a little different.
Yeah, because this one's a little less, you know, the fights at the end is, or maybe, are they spending?
It's a little less, yeah.
Oh, great, it is a little less. So it's like 150 mil?
No, it's 93 mil.
Okay.
$93 million they made this film for.
Mm. Yeah, it looks like it.
No, it doesn't look like
it. It looks like 93 mil.
No, it doesn't. It looks like...
It looks like less.
It looks like $400 million. That's what it looks like. Shut your
that
mouth.
That last fight is a little bit ropey. I like it. It feels like... your mates having a fight in the woods. It's nice because I'd prefer that to the swathe of CGI.
I like that.
hordes.
Also with the music. You know, as they're running down the hill. The whole fight taking place as they're running down the hillside towards Boromir. Both the baddies and the goodies running in the same direction. That is cool choreography, man. That's such a cool idea. How many big fights have you seen where both sides are trying to get somewhere else but fighting along the way? That's just cool, man. That creates such an interesting and fun fighting atmosphere. I absolutely love that. Anyway, opening weekend.
I didn't get that from that sequence at all. I also, like, are the Uruk-hai so stupid that, like, why would they go after the guy blowing the horn? You were like, oh,
they weren't going after the guy blowing the horn. They were going to find the halflings. Find the halflings. Like the big Uruk-hai says, find the halflings.
But then why is Bean blowing the horn then?
Because he's calling his mates back.
Calling his
How many times in this film have they just killed several hundred things between three of them? He's calling his three badass mates back so they can kick the ass of all these Uruk-hai, you know, all in one go.
He gets arrowed and he's like, get out of here, get out of here. And they don't get out of there.
No.
It's so frustrating.
Because they decide they want to stay and fight for Bean. They want to fight for Bean.
Yeah. They want to flick that Bean.
They want to flick that Bean until he's back alive again. But he won't be back alive again because he's dead. Okay.
They would have struck that Bean.
I would have followed you. My king. Yeah, my captain.
Do you know what a Bean is?
I know what a Bean is. Now shut up. Good Lord. Right. Opening weekend, US and Canada.
I just don't think of you as a sexual person. So Jeff would have been not surprised if you would have gone, you what? A Bean is a what?
Can I say something to you?
Good Lord. Good Lord.
Can I say, it's so funny to hear you say that you don't think of me as a sexual person, because I 100% think of you as a sexual person, because you're the most sexual person I've ever met in my life. You're practically breathing sex on a daily basis. Like, your whole being is about sex. Not in a sexy way or a sexual way, just in a sex way. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know if that's like a perverted thing or a dirty thing or what it is, but I can imagine you having sex and it doesn't seem weird at all. It's completely normal. Whereas I get it. I'm sort of sexless. I don't even like the term. I don't even like the P word. You know, I don't like to say Johnny. I don't like it when you say Johnny. I was thinking about this the other day. My TIFO podcast character, very sexless, right? There's no sex in that world at all. It's completely without sex, isn't it? And if I was ever to try and be an actor, I would have to rediscover. I'd have to learn how to play anything that evoked sex. We played this game the other day. Do you remember? We talked about actors and we said whether they were sex or not. Quite a lot of them out there that haven't got it, you know, but let's do it quickly with Lord of the Rings, right? Ian McKellen.
Oh, who is?
Yeah, who is sex, who isn't sex? In interpret it as you will, but for me it's about whether I see them as a sexual being or not. Ian McKellen.
No.
Viggo Mortensen.
Yes.
He probably is, yeah. Sean Bean.
Yes.
Elijah Wood.
No.
Sean Austin, Samwise Gamgee.
No.
I don't know. I think Sean Austin's got a little taint in him. A little bit of taint. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay, what about who else we got? Cate Blanchett.
No.
I think it's interesting, isn't it? That like Cate Blanchett, maybe specifically in Lord of the Rings also has got like, maybe actually in a lot of the characters she plays, she's interesting in that regard, isn't she? That she's like, often you would say that a lots of, you know, a sexist, misogynistic prerequisite for many leading ladies might be that they display, you know, they display a sexuality in some way, that there's a kind of sex about them. But in the case of Cate Blanchett, it doesn't really feel like that, does it?
She plays repressed sex very well. So when there is a little bit of sauce in her performance, and there are a few of them, it's like triple the sex.
Right, okay.
When she sort of turns it on a bit.
So most of the time, no, but sometimes bazinga, bazinga, bazinga.
Yeah. Yeah. Beyond.
Beyond bazinga, yeah. Oof. Okay. Ian Holm.
Yes.
You think, you can kind of imagine Ian Holm being a little dirty, can't you? Orlando Bloom.
No.
No, he's maybe the most sexless of them all. and
Jonathan Rhys Davies.
I was going to say Andy Serkis.
As Gollum.
he insists he only has sex with ping pong balls on. That's the thing.
He does. And he says, my precious, my precious. And then he spills his beans.
Anyway, I would say having sex to offer as part of your sort of aura, it's not everybody has that, you know? I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but you've got it.
Wait. Stop. Stop. Turn around. Turn around. Take a step.
Opening weekend US and Canada, how many dollar do you think this movie takes? December 23rd, 2001.
It's Christmas. Everyone turned out, surely. Everyone was so excited. We know what Logan made. We know what Indiana Jones roughly made.
What did Indiana Jones make?
In the Crystal Skull, it was sort of in the 80s.
Right, okay.
It almost made its... definitely its marketing budget back.
Right.
So does LOTR, the first one, I remember that they accrued and they got bigger and bigger and bigger. And so maybe this one starts smaller and it's more like it gets its budget back. So maybe it's 70 mil?
It's 47 mil.
Ooh.
It starts a little small. But as all the good things do, it starts small and then over time it was added to, you know?
A Richmond is never wrong in the box office game. He arrives at the number he exactly means to arrive at.
Right, except he is wrong. So what does that mean? This is your Gandalf impression where you basically just say, yeah, Gandalf, you are late, you prick. You actually are. You can't just show up saying, a wizard's never late, Master Frodo. He arrives precisely when he means to. Yeah, you fucking meant to arrive now, but you said you were going to arrive earlier, a.k.a. you are late.
You're late, mate. I hate that bit when they crack up laughing. It's the worst bit in the whole film.
It's not.
Frodo laughing in that. Elijah Wood, he sort of stinks, certainly in that moment.
No, he doesn't.
He semi-stinks. He stinks in that laughing bit.
I used to think that as well when I was a baby, when I was a child. I used to watch the film and think that, like, oh, this bit's not very good with their laughing. And then I realised, oh, wait, the problem's with me. I'm cynical and an idiot. And some people do just express joy when they meet each other and they see each other after a long time, yeah? It's wonderful to see you, Gandalf. My boy, I'm glad to be here, okay? Now... you were wrong about that, but that's fine because you've got the chance to be right about gross worldwide. Okay, gross worldwide. What are you saying?
It grows and grows and grows. 93 mil.
That was the budget.
Yeah, no, I know.
Okay.
I know.
Just
I
there.
Know. And so it makes 900 mil.
Wow. 897 million dollars. That's within the 10%. That's within the 1%.
That's 2 years ago having a whiff of, like, I think I knew it was a, like, they certainly get, they the latter two start to break a bill,
yeah.
And Return definitely does.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
But, like, yeah, no, that's good. I'm happy with that. I'm happy.
There you go. How about that, right? That's nice. So that was it. That was Fellowship of the Ring, and you've really changed your opinion about it. I applaud you. Well done. You've said it was one of the best films ever made, so I really appreciate that. Thank you. I'm going to stop my recording now.
Hopefully I never have to watch it again.
Well, let's talk about killing. We know it's using the air shaft. Will you listen to me? Shut up!
We'll be right back.
We have to pick another. We have to pick next week's film.
We've already picked it. We picked it at the end of, didn't we?
What is? Did we?
Didn't we? Yeah, we did. We did. It's Primer.
So this is a separate.
Well, the thing is, like, this
how
is
does it work?
This is
like Primer now. What's the timeline?
The funny thing is, like, what we said, because we're actually on episode 100 and something, like 130 something, right? What we said was that this would be the canon 100 episode. And of course, a canon episode is an episode where we pick a movie you forgot. The irony is, what we've actually done for the canon 100 episode is a special episode, which therefore, by definition, could not be the canon episode. So unfortunately, that does mean that the canon 100 episode is technically Primer, which comes out next week. You know, everyone's a winner, isn't it? You know, you get Lord of the Rings, and then you get Primer.
Right, and we need to talk about Primer because we haven't talked about Primer.
And we picked Primer at the end of last week because the audience picked this one.
And that was at the end of Godfather. All right, well, I'm going to go and, you know, sit in a garage, turn on some argon, and I'm going to then go back in time and stop myself from watching Fellowship of the Ring again.
If you go in a garage and turn on some argon or any other kind of gas, then I think it would be a very sad, albeit predictable, end to your life, okay? So I'd really discourage you from ever getting a garage or having any gas that you could turn on in the garage, okay?
When you watch Primer, that reference...
No, I know the reference. Yeah. I know the reference. I've seen the film Primer. I remember, you know, because it's not really a movie you forgot, is it? It's a movie you watched and then decided to never watch again, because it's not as good as all the people made it out to be, you know?
Listen.
I'm coming hard for Primer next week. I'm coming hard for Primer.
No, because I respected The Godfather, and you should respect Primer.
The Godfather?
Yeah, because you said, I want to talk about art. Okay, please, I don't want to have any fun today.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You said you wanted to talk about art. Okay, fine. We'll talk about art. I won't come hard for Primer, but the audience will know that in my mind, I'm thinking about coming hard for Primer, and I'm thinking about all the things that I could say. I won't say them, but I'll think about saying them.
Listen, you'll have 10 minutes at the front of the episode to come hard, okay? And I'll let you come hard. Yeah. All over Primer.
Sure, sure, sure.
And then we'll talk about art.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I'll come hard.
Okay. You've gone really hard on the coming bit, you know. It was subtle in mind, but you really just made it sound like you were talking about penises.
Jizz.